The Ray D'Arcy Show on RTE Radio 1 with All Care Pharmacy. Expert advice to keep the whole family healthy at All Care, the largest Irish-owned pharmacy brand.
Good afternoon. Happy Monday. It is Catherine Thomas sitting in for Ray for the next 2 weeks, and I am very much looking forward to lots of chat and banter in the coming days. We have a great show lined up for you today. We will be talking all things Love Island ahead of the big final tonight. And Melda has just texted in here. Catherine, I heard your promo on the programme when you mentioned Maura in Love Island. Hey, don't you think Greg is the person in Ireland we should be most proud of? What a gentleman he is. Apparently that is correct, Melda, but I am probably the only person in Ireland who is not watching Love Island, it seems. I did try and tune in a couple of weeks ago and tune straight back out, and then I knew I'd be talking to the panel today, so I watched the programme last night, and I actually watched it from beginning to end. I have to say, they brought their families in, and moms and dads and brothers and sisters, and it did make them seem less vacuous and a bit more real, if I can say that. But Maura is a great bit of crack, it has to be said, and I'm looking forward to finding out all about Greg later. I'll also be talking to a woman who befriended Rachel Williams, who befriended con artist Anna Delvey, and her life was completely turned upside down. Her finances were completely cleared out, so I'm looking forward to talking to her as well. As I said, Ray is taking some well-deserved holiday time with his family, as I'm sure lots of you are. And you know what? If you're heading to the airport this weekend on the family jollies, I'd love to hear from you, especially if you're bringing your parents or the in-laws along with you, because of course you love them, that's why they're going, but also because it means you're going to get a hand with the kids and therefore you might have some sort of a relaxing holiday yourself. 51551 or ray@rte.ie. Thomas Cook has done a new survey on the rise of multi-generational holidays, and this is where grandparents are being booked and paid for, I should add, in return for free babysitting, and that's gone from 57% in 2017 to 64% in 2019. And you know what, let's face it, it can be very hard to relax on a family holiday if you've got a young child, or if you've got a couple of children, you're up and down all day, you're trying to keep everybody entertained, you're trying to get into dinner early. And then certainly at my stage where I'm at, there is no such thing as a lie-in. You know, you're up at 6 or 6:30, and which means you're not really going to relax or stay out too late. You're going to be in bed early, so you can't really let the hair down. My friend is just back from Portugal. She was 2 weeks there, and she was telling me today she brought her mother-in-law for the first week, and then her mom came out for the second week. She said it was great. They weren't staying in a hotel. They were Airbnb, which was brilliant because it meant that everybody had their own space. But it was great sort of family bonding time for all of them. And it also meant she could get the couple of hours here or there to relax and read a book, and there was always a helping hand. So I'd also love to hear from you if you are a grandparent who is totally happy and have always gone on holidays and relishes the idea of babysitting and letting, you know, mom and dad out for a few drinks or for dinner on their own. Or equally, if you've declined, actually more importantly, if you've declined an all expenses paid family holiday. No thanks very much. I will see you in 7 days. This is not what I signed up for. 7 days of free babysitting. Let me know. 51551 for your texts, or ray@rte.ie for your emails. Now, as I said, it's holiday season. It's also wedding season as well. Weddings are in full flow. They're taking place up and down the country. Mine is not too far away, and I thought I was getting through my to-do list pretty well, until reading Sinead Ryan's piece in the Herald today, and I've just now added another thing onto it. Thank you, Sinead. Wedding insurance. And to be honest, I actually never thought of it. Because you're trying to think of everything going right and putting things in place that, you know, to make it a good day, you don't really want to think, or you don't stop to think about what could go wrong. But it makes total sense to have it. It covers everything, she says, from theft of rings, failure of florists, to turn up bakers, photographers. I know that happens a lot when people book photographers and they've double booked, and you can get it from as cheap as €33. So that is definitely going on the to-do list. The only thing it doesn't cover is himself getting cold feet and not turning up on the day. Thankfully, I don't know anyone that's happened to, and touch wood, it doesn't happen anytime soon. But the big one you do hear about a lot is it's the pliers, you know, hotels having taken deposits and going into liquidation, or boutiques closing down, leaving brides without a dress. So let me know if something went wrong for you on the day or before the wedding that left you in a bit of bother. 51551 or ray@rte.ie. Forewarned is forearmed for all of us brides in the making. I don't really remember. I mean, weddings where you go and their speeches are mortifying, or, you know, somebody drinks too much or whatever. But no real disaster weddings I've been at. I was at a wedding where the groom forgot to bring the green folder. You know, and this is quite common with the wedding cert and everything in it. So we sat in the church for about 50 minutes while he legged it out the side door and jumped into a taxi and went and got it out of the bedside locker. And then there were other stories. Remember when the big snow happened and brides and grooms who decided to go ahead with their weddings because they had to, and then guests who couldn't travel, and there were half empty function rooms all around the country, and yet couples still had to pay in full for the meals for a full wedding. So, as I said, get your wedding disasters into me. If only we can try and prevent them happening to anyone else. 51551 or ray@rte.ie. A couple of texts coming in here on Love Island. I would rather pull my own teeth out, Catherine, than watch that muck. Love Island. Somebody else then says, I love Island, Love Island, Catherine. I will be very sad when it's all over. Mad, I know. See, this is it. And I can't be too judgmental because I haven't given it the time. And do you know, it is great that there's two Irish characters in there. And it says a lot about the Irish-English relationship, I think, in terms of they're voting for us, you know. And anytime I see Maura or hear sound bites from her or, you know, read about her in the paper, people seem to genuinely like her. Like, she seems like a genuine El Sol, do you know what I mean? So there you go. Anyway, I was listening to the show on Friday and Ray was chatting about chores, about working women do nearly three times more housework than men. And this sparked a bit of a debate with lots of men getting in touch, like the guy who said, what's the ratio for gardening, household maintenance and car washing? And another then said, Ray, I'll start doing more housework if my wife starts unblocking the septic tank when it backs up, putting out the bins, emptying the odd mouse trap, cleaning the gutters, need I go on? So I was sitting there going, we have the men's side of the argument, but I want to hear from women too. And a lot of those tasks that were pointed out, I don't think they're daily tasks. Do you know what I mean? Like, how often do you clean the gutters? And the bin, I know, because I put the bin out in my house, only goes out once a week. But it's the daily, you know, the household jobs that you do on a day-to-day basis. How do you split them in your house? Do you have a chart where it's all laid out, or do you just find yourself doing all of the daily tasks? Let me know, 51551 or ray@rte.ie. And this gave me a giggle today. The Sun has printed some of the funniest spelling mistakes on Twitter. And this is on the back of Ivanka Trump, who is Donald Trump's daughter. She took to Twitter very nicely to congratulate Boris Johnson on becoming Prime Minister of the United Kingdom. Yes, we have all done that where you've sent a text or a tweet and you realise your spelling mistake afterwards. At least on Instagram now, you can go in and edit it. A few more that they've name checked. I love sex with my boyfriend, but he never makes me orgasm. The seizure salad from McDonald's is so good. God gave you a second chance. Never take anything for granted. And my particular favourite, I smell like men's colon. You would really hope that that tweeter was referring to men's cologne. So there you go. Has anybody ever sent you a text with a hilarious mistake in it? Or did anyone ever send you the wrong text by accident? I've got a few incriminating ones of them. 51551 or ray@rte.ie. But I think everyone is guilty of that when you send a text with the three kisses at the end and you're not even thinking and it goes to your accountant or your colleague or something. Or is that just me? I don't know. Catherine, I bring my parents away with us every year and they are eager to mind their grandchildren. We're very happy to let them do it too. Couldn't imagine going away without them now, if I'm honest. And my big mistake on my wedding day was to show up, says James. There you go. 51551 or ray@rte.ie. Corrigan Kerry has texted in. I worked as an assistant manager in a hotel and the father of the bride stood up for his speech at a wedding and said, my daughter is married now. He certainly wasn't our choice, but she is stuck with him now. The entire family got up and walked out. Credit to the bride. She continued to enjoy her wedding. Oh, ouch. And then we were talking about text messages and spelling mistakes in text messages. I text my hubby to take the coq en vin out of the freezer without checking. He didn't know what the hell he was supposed to do with a coquettish Audrey Hepburn. We got a takeaway that night. My name is Orla and I often get mistext, hi, Oral. And then we were talking about grandparents going on holidays with their children or with their grandchildren. And Anne says, what? The roping in of grandparents to mind one's kids on holidays. I would never have thought of doing this to my parents. That is an awful idea. And we had another text in that said, I would love my parents to be alive to take them away with us. They would love to mind our children. And you see, this is it. I was away in Tullamore. We had Pádraig's dad's anniversary mass at the weekend, and my mom spent the Saturday and Saturday afternoon and Sunday with Ellie. And it is such a special relationship. You know what I mean? And she's very lucky to have the grandparents that she does. And my mom loves spending time with her. And it is a time for them to bond as well, I think. And I don't know, I think it's possibly a win-win situation for everybody. If the grandparent wants to go, they do a couple of nights and the parents get a night out or a night away or an hour to have a sleep. Anyway, it's different horses for courses. Catherine, Love Island reflects a society that is now brain dead, addicted to technology, and is mind-numbingly boring. It is a very sad situation. I'm on my own. Oh, this, we were talking about household chores. I'm on my own, so I do all the jobs myself. Work in the morning, outside jobs on a good day, cleaning inside, etc. When it's raining, it's hard work and I'm exhausted, but still, I'd rather be on my own than with a grumpy old man. I put out the bins, I empty the mouse traps, I mow the lawn, I trim the hedges, I wash, I hoover my own car, all the DIY jobs, I drill holes in the walls, I change the bulbs, I cook all the meals, I do all the shopping. He works and I don't. Any chance you'd come round to my house, possibly for a day or two? Anyway, keep them coming in, 51551 or ray@rte.ie.
The Ray D'Arcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Email ray@rte.ie. The Ray D'Arcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
So keep your texts coming in to 51551 and your emails to ray@rte.ie. Now, in her 20s, while working for Vanity Fair, Rachel Williams befriended a socialite called Anna. Anna Delvey was seemingly a German heiress with money to spare, and she took Rachel along for the ride. Free dinners in the most exclusive restaurants, personal training sessions with a celebrity fitness coach, and an all-expenses trip to Marrakesh in Morocco. That was until Rachel found out that Anna actually wasn't who she thought she was. She discovered Anna was a fraud and is now currently serving prison time for grand larceny. Rachel joins us on the line now to share her story. Nice to talk to you, Rachel.
Nice to talk to you. Thank you for having me.
Listen, I mean, it sounds like a storyline from a movie, and we've all seen these con artist movies, but you never imagine in a million years that you're going to be caught up in the middle of it, right?
No, not for a second. I thought I was a very good judge of character before this.
So tell me about Anna, and how did you meet her? When did you first meet?
Sure. I met Anna out one night when I was with some friends I knew from New York. It was in 2016. And during that summer, she became a part of our friend group. And I hung out with her a few times one-on-one, but she was just kind of someone in the mix that was around.
Okay. And when you first met her, like, what struck you about her? What was she like?
She was fun-loving. She was ambitious. I thought she was clever. She was working on this art foundation with her, she said it was her trust fund, and I admired that somebody with so much wealth as I imagined her to have was so motivated to do something, you know, so substantive with her money.
Mm. And what did she tell you of her background?
She said that she was from Cologne, Germany, that she had a younger brother who was about 12 years younger than her, but she was raised mostly as an only child. She said she was not close with her parents. I did not pry about money. She had told the same story to so many people that what she didn't tell me directly, other people filled in just sort of in conversation. Mm. But, you know, as people do, it wasn't something that we discussed really explicitly one-on-one.
Sure, and it's never nice to talk about money, but clearly you knew she was loaded because she was paying for everything and she was setting up this foundation. And right. At the time, she was living in the Standard Hotel, in a suite in the Standard Hotel in New York.
Yes, that's correct. And then she left and came back in February of 2017 and checked into a hotel called 11 Howard, where she would live for the next 3 months.
Mm. You see, if that was me, I would absolutely want to know. And maybe I am more crass than you, but, you know, to have that amount of money, and she became quite a good friend of yours. So did you never have that conversation about where her money came from?
Well, she did say that, you know, without me prying, she did tell me it came from her family. And she said that it came, I think, from a grandfather is what she She had told me, I don't know exactly where the wealth originated in her story, but okay. She also asked me about how much money I made, and I told her, and she laughed at me, which I think, you know, some people might have been insulted by that, but I also at the time felt underpaid, so I kind of found it supportive in this very backwards way.
And where were you working at the time?
I was working as a photo editor at Vanity Fair, which was a job I loved. It was my dream job, and I had been there for over 6 years when I met Anna.
Okay. And when I was reading about it, because obviously it was all over the media, it was all over social media, her trial at the time, I mean, she did pay for everything. I
think, you know, it's funny, in hindsight, there's this view of her as going out all the time to all the best restaurants. But when I knew Anna, I felt like her only friend. You know, we spent most of our time in her hotel. There was a nice restaurant on the ground level, and she was very convincing, and she made it seem so like easy and casual. And yes, she was very generous. But I was living paycheck to paycheck. This person was my friend. She seemed, you know, happy to be this generous. And it was for, you know, 2 months of my life. Mm-hmm. It was, you know, 8 weeks. It wasn't every day, it was often, but it was just this weird little phase. And she was a sociopath, so she had this charm where you found yourself just sort of sucked into her orbit. And before I knew it, yes, I spent a lot of time with this person. And in hindsight, I think it's easier to pick it apart. But
of course, of course. And you know, as I said, like you've seen that movie Catch Me If You Can. Had you seen that movie with Leonardo DiCaprio? And and you just never did you ever. Doubt at any point up until that trip to Morocco that things might not have been what she said they were?
You know, it wasn't even in Morocco that I began to doubt. It was like 2 months after that when I was waiting on this imaginary wire transfer. I believed that she was who she said she was. I had never met anybody who was just living a complete lie.
Okay, so she and you had worked out together. She's paying for these $300 training sessions with a celebrity personal trainer. Uh-huh. And then she goes, you know what, let's take this trip to Morocco.
Yeah.
And what had she told you about the trip? Where did she want to stay? And
because she wasn't a U.S. citizen, she needed to leave every 3 months to reset her visa. And she pitched this trip as though she wanted to work on a documentary about the creation of that art foundation. And she wanted to try bringing a videographer along on this trip to see what it was like to have someone around with a camera. And maybe it could be the beginning of this documentary.
Okay.
So she pitched it as almost a business expense. And first it was just, I'm going to get this villa in Marrakesh. Who should we invite? I want to invite the personal trainer and a videographer. And then it kind of dominoed from there. It wasn't, you know, from the offset, let's go on an all expenses paid vacation, like some sort of pop-up ad you might get on a computer. Mm. I think I might have seen through that differently, but it kind of just snowballed.
It was kind of plausible that this was sort of a work trip that she was going to document for social media.
And she lived in hotels all the time in New York too, so it seemed very much, you know, a part of her normal behavior and lifestyle.
How was she bankrolling the hotel bills?
Well, she was, what I now know, check kiting. She was basically weaving money out of thin air by writing herself checks from one account to another account at different banks and then withdrawing the money before the checks bounced.
Wow.
Yeah, clever. Wow. She was clever. You know, she was fooling these institutions that have checks in place for fraud. And if they fell for her, of course, a friend who trusts her as a friend. I feel like, you know, it must have been easy to fool me.
Sure. Yeah. And so you ended up in Morocco. It was all supposed to be paid for. But actually, before you even got on the flights, you ended up handing over your credit card, right?
She was crafty. Yeah, I did. On the day we were supposed to leave, the flights hadn't been booked. And of course, because I was a photo producer and so often booked travel for people with crazy schedules, this didn't strike me as odd, since she said she didn't know what time she's going to get out of meetings. And then, you know, she's caught in something and asks for my help booking the flights. And that's something I do all the time, like I've said. So yeah, it's easy. You're paying for this trip. I'd love to help however I can. With what card? Sends me a card. The card doesn't go through. She then says, oh, the airline people are leaving in 10 minutes. Can you help? And I, you know, when people act in situations where there's urgency or stress, I think decisions become less rational. Mm. And so I, at that point, fronted the cost for 4 travelers to fly to Marrakesh.
Okay, so you pay for the flights, you get there,
yep.
You land in your hotel, and what happened there?
Everything seems fine for the first day and a half or so. And then when we leave the hotel for the first time, Anna's cards don't work when she's picked out $1,300 worth of dresses in the marketplace. And I ask her if she's told her bank she's traveling. She says no. So of course I think, well, yeah, they probably think it's fraud.
And we've all been there where you've forgotten to tell your bank that you're going away. And,
right.
Yeah.
It's completely understandable. And since she already owes me money, she says, well, why don't we just add this to the amount that I'm going to wire you next week? So it just keeps adding up and keeps adding up. And then, of course, the major thing was that midway through the trip, we realized the hotel doesn't have a functioning card on file. And these two managers appear in our villa on my last full day in Morocco. Mm. And they refuse to leave without a functioning credit card. And Anna pressures me to give them mine.
And let's kind of set the scene here, because this wasn't a 3-star charter flight hotel. This was the best of the best.
Oh, gosh. Yes, it was.
How much was your villa per night?
I think it was around $7,000 per night. Yeah, it was a private villa. It was its own little small house. There was a butler. There were 3 private bedrooms. I had never been anywhere like that. I've traveled a lot through work and through, you know, family, friends, and with my family. It just never something like this. It was excessive.
Okay, so you came to check out of the hotel, and her cards weren't on file.
No. Exactly. The card, you know, a hotel is supposed to have a card on file before you check in. So these managers arrive and they say, we need the card that we're supposed to have on file before you check in. The bill will be settled when you check out.
Sorry, and they arrived into your room.
Yes, they were standing in our villa and effectively blocking our path to the door, just insisting upon having a credit card. And I was told that that was for the temporary charge that a hotel often makes when you check in. You know, you're used to seeing, normally it's closer to what, $200, not $30,000. But
is that,
I was told,
that was the total, was it?
I didn't realize that at first, but I was told that would be temporary and that a credit for that amount would appear back in my account. And I was leaving before Anna, so she was going to check out on her own, at which point I thought she would need to settle the bill. But of course, after I was gone, I continued on to France for a work trip. When I landed, she then texts me and says, oh, why are you $70,000 on Monday? The whole bill's going on your cards.
$70,000.
Yeah, well, she raised the number spontaneously, but she owed me $62,000. But it was a Friday, and she said, I'll send you the confirmation for the wire this evening, and you'll have the money early next week. So,
and can I ask you, Rachel, at that time when you were working for Vanity Fair, and when she laughed at you, what you earned in a year, how much of that bill was what you earned in a year?
Oh, that was more than I made in a year.
Yeah.
And she certainly knew that. Yeah, but you know, I, as awkward and as stressed and as terrified as I was by that balance, I still trusted my friend. And knowing the total, which was so much bigger than, you know, I didn't know I could put that much money on my credit cards, I felt awkward that, you know, I felt grateful to her for having spent so much on this lavish vacation and for inviting me as her guest. So I was, you know, nervous and stressed and trying to be as clear as possible about the seriousness of the money, but also thank you so much for having me, and I'm sorry that this worked out this way. I know it was stressful for you too.
And did her demeanor change at all when she was confronted by staff, you know?
Mm-hmm. She was, in hindsight, very, or even in the moment, she seemed disconnected.
Okay.
She didn't seem shaken by the seriousness of the situation in the same way that I was, or that I think other people would be.
Hmm. So you believed she was waiting on an inheritance. When did you suspect that she was conning you?
I thought for a long time that she was having some sort of a mental health problem, like a disconnect from reality, or had, you know, crossed her parents one too many times. I first began to suspect in late July.
Okay, so how many months after the trip to Morocco?
2 months.
2 months, okay. And in that time, she got back to New York, you got back to New York after your work trip. Did you stay very friendly, or did she sort of step back from your friendship, or how did that work?
All of our conversation, you know, it sort of distilled into this back and forth about money. And she was in touch with me every single day with excuses and apologies and excuses and apologies. And it just sent me in this spiral of, you know, chaos. I just couldn't figure out what was happening. But she did stay in touch. I wouldn't say she remained a close friend at all.
Okay. So going back to, sorry, I interrupted you there. When did you suspect, or how did you suspect then, that she was definitely conning you?
Well, after she sent me spinning in circles for 2 months, and I, while still staying in touch with her, had gone to lawyers and realized for complicated reasons that I explained in the book, that wasn't a path I should go. And then I went to the police, and they gave me this very patronizing, well, like, there's nothing we can do, but with your face, don't worry, sweetie, like, you could start a GoFundMe page to get your money. I had kept striking out and striking out, so we confronted her in person, and seeing... we being the personal trainer who had gone with us, one of her friends, and I sat her down, and seeing the way that she responded, you know, without any sincere understanding of the terrible time I was going through and how much trouble I was in, she was just disconnected and you know, worried about how she was suddenly appearing in these tabloids for having stiffed bills in New York. And the day after that, I found my way to the district attorney's office and realized she was the subject of an investigation.
And were you completely and utterly shocked that you realized that this was actually bigger than you? This was all across New York.
Yeah, I was reeling. It was so incomprehensible. But at the same time, even though it was my worst case scenario, it was the first solid like explanation that made sense of the chaos. And I had part of what was so frustrating, aside from the money, which was so destabilizing, was not being able to find answers to explain it.
So when you did go to the authorities, what did you find out? I mean, how much had she defrauded people, and who had she defrauded?
Yeah. When I first went, they couldn't really tell me anything about the investigation. So I gave them everything I had, because I had been obviously investigating on my own. But after she was indicted and then arraigned, I realized that she had been check kiting, as we've discussed. And then, you know, she was trying to get I think it was $22 to $25 million from various financial institutions, hedge funds in New York. So it was mass scale. It was big scale fraud she was committing.
Did you go to any of the court cases?
I actually had to testify against her. Mm-hmm. So I only attended during my testimony, which was, it was very hard. It was a hard experience.
And again, sitting, looking at her, mm-hmm. Was there that disconnect, that sense of no remorse?
Oh, yes. When I avoided looking at her for the most part, but when I had to identify the defendant, I looked up and she was looking me in the eye and smirking. So it just really confirmed for me that this is a person who just doesn't get it. Mm. Yeah.
I know you've written about that you did a lot of research after the case and after the trial to find out more about how people's brains work who are con artists and who are sociopaths. You know, what did you learn about her, or did it all fit? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, no, I do. If I were going through it knowing what I know now about the indicators, would I have caught it? I think the biggest indicator would be someone who has this magnetic allure that you can't explain and you can't put your finger on. Even now, you know, even though I really did like her, I have a hard time articulating what it was. There's just sort of this like thing that pulls you in and you don't know what it is, but they're so charming. But like that is the biggest indicator, you know, in hindsight, as I keep saying. Are there other things? Yeah, superficial charm, glibness, you know, lack of remorse, all of these things that she certainly ticks all the boxes, but that's the main one.
Mm. And I remember watching the trial, because she became a cult figure during that time. She turned up in the best outfits. She was dressed in Chanel. She had this social media page. I mean, literally, it sort of caught the world's attention that she was almost gloating in this social media frenzy that was around her. And am I right in saying that did she have a personal stylist for her court appearances as well?
You're quite right. She did, yes. Yeah, yeah. It was extremely frustrating for me to watch, but it also made perfect sense. It was the same thing that I had witnessed her doing all along, you know, getting by on this peacocking and hoping that people pay more attention to, you know, it's not taking it seriously, and then maybe turning a blind eye to the places where she's cutting corners or committing serious crimes. And although ultimately the jury convicted her of most of the charges, she still played a lot to the court of public opinion. And here she is with this Netflix deal, having gotten $30,000 from them to pay for her lawyer, which is so backwards. It was extremely frustrating for me to watch, having lived through so much.
So what did the jury decide? What did she get?
She was sentenced to 4 to 12 years. They did not find her guilty of her crimes towards me, which was devastating given that all of the evidence was there and I lived through it. And I know so obviously that it was criminal, but she, her lawyer did a good job of sort of sugarcoating, I think, her had to fake it till she could make it mentality, and questioning whether or not she would have paid me back if she could have gotten the money and attention and all of these things.
Mm. And how do you feel, Rachel, about everything looking back on it now? Because it is still quite recent, and I know you described it as a very traumatic experience overall.
Yeah, I understand trauma is relative, and there are people who go through long-term relationships that may take a turn like this, or, you know, have things they lose and can't get back. But for me, in my life, this was the hardest thing I've ever had to go through. And to feel that betrayal from someone that you thought you knew and liked, and that you had shown goodwill to for so long, it was very painful, and it's taken a long time to recover from. And writing the book actually really helped
a lot with that.
Yeah.
And because, as you said, it's traumatic. You put your trust in somebody, and then you're also dealing with that feeling, I'd imagine, of, you know, how was I gullible, or how did I let that person fool me? Is that something that you battled with as well?
To some extent, but I also think I've come away from this more aware of myself as a trusting person and as someone who looks for good in other people, and I don't want to feel negatively towards those impulses because I think they're healthy and I think they're important. You know, you want to connect with people in your life. You want to have relationships that you can believe in. But I think knowing that that is my, you know, my way of being, I can be more aware of those instances where I find myself making excuses for the same person again and again and again. If that's happening, it's time to step back. And when they show you who they are, believe them, you know. You can't.
So, going back to the finances, did you get that money back? Did you get the $32,000 back?
I did. The whole $62,000, in fact, after a lot of hard work. I contested the charges with American Express after I learned that Anna was a con artist. And after a lot of back and forth, they ultimately did protect me from the hotel charges, which was wonderful and a huge relief. And then I also was able to, you know, make some money through writing the book that I used to partially repay some loans I had had to take from friends.
Okay. So your friends stood by you, your family stood by and helped you out. And as you said, you wrote this book. It's My Friend Anna is the name of the book. What was it like? Was it quite cathartic, as you said, writing it?
Extremely. It was also hard because I had to revisit all of these really painful exchanges and experiences and unpack them and break them apart so I could really understand what was happening. But it was extremely cathartic, and I feel much more capable of talking to you without bursting into tears because of the fact I think I've explored it so fully.
Mm. And then, of course, there is the HBO series that's coming up with Lena Dunham. Tell me about that.
I'm thrilled that Lena Dunham is working on it for HBO, and I expect to be involved, and I look forward to having more news to announce on that front, hopefully sometime soon.
Okay, and this is on the back of the book that you wrote, or on the back of the story? This is specifically on your book?
Specifically on, yes, my book, and yes, there is the Netflix adaptation as well. I think they're working with Anna directly, but I feel there are so many facets to this, and there are different angles, clearly. So I think in some ways, maybe if they both happen, they'll complement each other.
Mm. And so what's going to happen? She gets out. I mean, she's not going to do 12 years or whatever they sentenced her to. Like, she's going to get out. Is she going to be deported? Is she going to be involved in this Netflix documentary? Of course she is, but is she going to benefit from that? Are you going to have to work alongside with her?
Oh, absolutely not, to the last question. No chance. There's a reason I'm working on a separate project. I wouldn't sacrifice, you know, my morals and my feeling towards this person for the sake of entertainment. You know, I think being entertained is part of why people are wearing those t-shirts and I like entertainment too, but I think there's a deeper problem here, and I don't think she's somebody to be celebrated. But when she gets out, I don't expect she's going to suddenly reform and be this moralistic, kind-hearted person. I think once a sociopath, always a sociopath. I think she'll continue to manipulate the people around her. And yes, I think she'll be deported.
If you could go back, what would you change?
You know, I've actually tried hard not to feel so much regret or to look at it that way, because I can't change anything. I think it's more like, what can I learn and how can I change going forward? I acted from a place of goodwill. You know, what did I, you know, and some people are like, when it looks too good to be true, it is too good to be true. And I understand that to some extent. But at the same time, I think it's okay to believe in your friends, to trust your friends and to want to be there for them. Mm. So I'm not going to spend too much time, if I can help it, feeling regret.
Mm. You're dead right. And tell me, how has life been since? Are you still living in New York? Has this now writing, has that become your full-time job? Or are you still with Vanity Fair?
It's still very fresh. We turned this book around very fast. So I feel that writing has taken up a lot of time. I actually got laid off from Vanity Fair in February, which was in some ways a godsend. I don't think I could have finished the book had I been still balancing my full-time job. And now the book is out, and this, you know, talking to you and has been such a learning experience and something I'm really grateful for. And now I'm just taking a moment to regroup before I figure out what comes next.
Well, Rachel, lovely chatting to you today. That's Rachel Williams. The book is called My Friend Anna, The True Story of Anna Delvey, the Fake Heiress of New York City, and it's out now. Rachel, thanks again. Have a
Thank
great
you.
Day.
Thank you. You too.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Text 51551. The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Now, at the top of the show, we were talking about sending texts to the wrong people, spelling mistakes in texts. Steve says, hey, Catherine, I once sent a text in a pub when I was sitting with my mate's ex, and I said in the text, she'll be leaving soon, so you can pop in. But I sent it to her instead. My heart nearly dropped when I saw her picking up the phone to read it. Christy in Walkinstown says, a friend of mine inquired from her aunt re her health. She replied, I'm grand, but I wish the doc would stop giving me them tantalizers. And finally, Alan says, my name is Alan, and one careless colleague often texts, hey, anal, which probably becomes tiresome after a while, I'd imagine. Stand-up comedians Joe Rooney, a.k.a. Father Damo from Father Ted, is here in studio alongside Patrick McConnell.
McDonnell, sorry.
a.k.a. Owen McLove, also from Father Ted. And you guys are here to talk about your new tour, Culture Warriors.
Yes.
You're taking it nationwide.
We're all over the place, yeah. We're in Dundrum now on the 13th of September, but we're all over the countryside as well. I think we're in Enniscorthy.
Enniscorthy this Saturday.
In the Presentation Theatre there, yeah.
Very good.
Yeah. So,
did any of you ever send a dodgy text to the wrong person, or did you receive a text?
The best story I have is my wife. She had an old phone years ago. You know, if someone's name began with A, they often had to. It was that by default you sent it to the first person
yes.
list in these old phones. Yeah. And our electrician was called Aidan, and she kept sending him really dodgy texts. But she had a breast check one time, came out really excited, and texted him, "My boobs are grand." But then her name was Colette, so she C X. You know,
oh
so
my
X,
God!
X,
yeah. Oh dear! Yeah. Oh dear! Yeah, did she delete Aidan out of her phone by any chance?
Yeah, she's got a smartphone then. Yeah, yeah.
Very good, very good. So listen, Culture Warriors, this is your new tour. Tell us about it. Well, actually, tell us first of all, what makes a real Culture? What is a real Culture?
We both grew up in the countryside. I grew
both
up in a farm.
Right?
Even though most people think I'm from Dublin because of Father Damo
and all that.
I was born in Galway and grew up in Meath in a farm, so I'm a proper Culture. I've milked cows and everything, fed calves.
I was listening to Ray a couple of weeks ago, and he had the Tully twins on. Is that what they're called, the Tully twins from Cavan? Are they Coot Hill?
And
they were on Gogglebox, and the two most Culture fellas you could come across, and they both categorically denied being Culture themselves. So what makes a Culture?
It's a frame of mind, really, isn't it? It's a tricky one. We call it Culture Warriors because it's like culture warriors.
Yes.
And I think modern life is very confusing to a lot of people around the country. You know, the PC-ness and whatever is very, very confusing, and have we got
all a bit too PC?
Yes, indeed. We're even afraid to talk now, in case
we are.
Say something
Your
wrong.
Producer's looking at us the whole time. We're really nervous.
Do you feel you can get away on stage with a lot more? You know, when it's a contained audience.
Yeah,
Now, in the day of social media and everything else, do you have to be mindful as comedians?
A little bit, because if you're trying out new material, you have to try it out knowing that some of it might be dodgy and someone might record it and put it up on social media.
Yes.
And you go, that's not fair because I'm trying it out. I'm working on it.
Yes, yeah.
But that's not the way it goes.
We were on the weekend at the Ivy Gardens in Dublin, and you get a lot of middle-class Dublin people there, and you're quite nervous with them. They are very, very uptight, and they really get nervous. And I was gigging recently in Donegal and down in Kerry. They don't care at all.
You can
say anything.
That's right. Yeah.
It's off limits. So I think there's a connection between PC-ness and motorways.
Yeah.
Dual carriageways bring the PC-ness to places.
There's a line I was using, I'd say, if I was running a company, I'd have more women. I just employ women because think of the money I'd save in wages. Now, that would not go down well in Dublin, I'll tell you that.
Your career is over, but Joe. We've cancelled the tour. We were meant to be...
Well, as a load of people rush to book tickets. Come here, Boris Johnson, he's now Prime Minister, President, I was about to say, Prime Minister in the UK. And you guys feel it might not be a disaster for Irish people particularly. Is that correct?
Yeah, it's a tricky one. You know, because I grew up near the border and there was a whole industry growing up in the 70s and 80s. People making lots of money smuggling things over and back, like cattle, you know, diesel and other things.
Butter.
Yeah. Spangles, Mars bars, you know, you name it. There was a whole... that was a major industry. And the peace
the
process...
Spangles were banned in the Republic, I think.
They weren't that nice, actually. But it was a big industry and that was just wiped out with all this peaciness and, you know, and the peace process and all that in the 90s. Yeah. And I think there are people who are, you know, near the border, he'd be kind of excited by a hard border. And, you know, getting a few bob back and getting a little van and smuggling.
Yeah. So in favour of Boris.
You are in favour of Boris.
Yeah.
The housing crisis, of course, it's a big issue in the news right now. Does it mean that artists and comedians are being priced out of renting?
Yeah. There's a guy we do, Fikra, he's like, he's a refugee from Ballsbridge. He's from Ballsbridge, but he has to live in Drogheda. He feels like a refugee, cut off from his culture because of rents have gone up and he's living in Drogheda. He doesn't even understand how they talk or whatever, you know, and he can't get vegan food, that kind of thing. So
when I started comedy, I paid like 30 quid rent a week in Dublin for a bed sit, and it was really easy to go full time. Nowadays you can't do that. You have to kind of, I think in the future there'll be a little shanty town just outside, look, with tin roofs outside Dublin where all the artists live. Everyone you see on RTE except the really well paid ones. But you know, and like we'll all be living in a little shanty town. We can't afford, because you have to live in Dublin, that's where the audience is, but we can't afford to live here.
That's a big problem.
A big dilemma.
Things have gone too soppy as well, the love songs and all that. There's no love songs for people who've been together for 20 years, is there? You know what I mean? They're all soppy. There's none like, I just called to say... I'm in Tesco's, do you want that from the shops? You know what I mean? People who've been together for 20 years don't have songs.
Come here, I said Father Ted at the top of the show. Do people still always... bring up Father Ted with you guys, and is it something that you're like, oh, leave me alone with the Father Ted?
No, we put it all over our posters. So, no, not at all. And it's a brilliant show. I've watched a few of the episodes recently, actually. Not the one I'm in, but it still stands up.
It still does. It's just mega. It's absolutely mega. Tell me, what can people expect from Culture Warriors? Because I know you're in the Mill Theatre in Dundrum on Friday the 13th of September.
Yeah.
And as you said, then you're different parts.
Enniscorthy this week.
This Saturday.
Enniscorthy.
Presentation Theatre, I think it's called.
Okay.
It's the stand-up. We do refer to Father Ted in it. We do actually have a lovely girls' competition, don't we?
Very good.
Yeah. And it's not just girls, it's anyone can join in. We don't even check what they are. And we stand up music. I do a lot of music in my act. And then we've sketches, these sketches, characters, you know.
Great. Okay. Donal O'Beale from Scaries and Donegal says, hey, I live with Paddy McDonnell in Buckley Flat Maynooth. Oh my God, the crack we had together. Paddy was tight with his money.
No way.
He still is.
It would kill him to change a tenner.
Yeah. Never. That's not absolutely not true. Yeah. That's terrible. I get you, Donal.
Listen.
I agree with you, Donal.
Culture Warriors, I said, is the name of the show. Tickets can be got at milltheatre.ie, and that's for the show on Friday, the 13th of September. And as you said, lots of other dates around the country. So check out your local theatre for dates. Thanks, guys. We'll take a break.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Tweet at Radio Ray RTE. The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Welcome back. We have State Lights in studio, some live music on a Monday, which is always good. How you doing, lads?
Great. Good.
Not at all. Shopsy, Joe, Noel and Paul. We've already got a text message in from Paul Hennessy going, State Lights are mega. They're going to be the next big Irish band. Love their stuff. You haven't even played anything yet. That's just great.
You're very at home now.
You are playing the Independence Festival in Cork this weekend, which is always great bit of crack. Mm. You looking forward to it?
Yeah, so it'll be actually, I think, our third time playing there. Is that right?
I think so,
it'll be great. So we're playing on the Village stage. We're kind of kicking off the music on the Saturday at 6:45, I think. So, yeah, that'll be great.
Mega festivals happening in Ireland. I just think the last couple of years, they're everywhere. They're popping up. I know, is it All Together Now is happening in Waterford?
Yep.
this weekend as well. I haven't managed to blag a ticket for that, but I still might. Yeah. I still might. Anyway, you're going to do a little cover for us, first of all, to start us off. What is it?
So it's Take On Me by A-ha.
Love this song. And I remember the video clearly, like it was yesterday. Yeah. Take it away, guys. Right.
Another day to find you shying away. I'll be coming for your love, okay? Take on me, take on me, take me on, take on me. I'll be gone in a day or two. Life is okay. Say after me. Is it better to be safe than sorry?
It was all I could do to not like join in there. My microphone was still live, and I really wanted to go. I really wanted to go and hit that top note with you. That sounded brilliant. That's State Lights, and you guys are going to be back at the end of the show to do a little other number for us.
Indeed.
That would be fabulous. Sounding amazing. Thank you for that. Anish Toshe and I'm the Preve Scalton and Nuachta Le Mike O'Fianna. Good man, Michael. Thanks a million. Pat says, wow, now that is how to do a cover. Brilliant. More info on the band, please. We have State Lights in studio and they are coming in a bit later on, Pat, and I'll give you a couple of dates of where else they're playing around the country in the coming weeks. Conor Pope is here.
How are you?
I have to start by slagging you off in a major way.
Yeah,
we were talking about sending inappropriate texts to the wrong people. And just before we came on air, our producer, Lisa Marie, she actually wouldn't let me slag you off until she had checked it was okay with you,
oh,
that
fine.
I do. So you sent a text message to
I sent kisses to the producer, Lisa Marie, and you know, we don't have that kind of relationship.
So you hurriedly
her.
Apologized afterwards for
so it was only because I kind of used to signing off messages to my wife like that. And then I was only a couple of minutes later I realized, oh God, no. So I had to, and then I kind of felt like, well, what do? I just let the kisses stand, and then it'll just be this tension between us forever.
It's
like, what do I say, or what do I just? So I just had to take back the kisses and
you
say,
did.
Listen, they were not intended for you, and I hope no offense was taken. So, and do you know what? It's not the first time I've sent similar kisses to my boss.
Yes,
who he was delighted and very confused.
And I think we have the emojis now because she just texts back like the laughing, crying, laughing emojis at you.
And to be honest,
to diffuse the situation,
emojis do. Emojis just make me feel old.
Yes,
because I don't really understand emojis, and I'm forever sending the wrong ones or the inappropriate ones. And then the Emoji Movie, which I took my kids to, is possibly the worst film I've ever seen, and it's up there. Well, I suppose Sex and the City 2 is pretty bad as well, let's be honest.
Yes,
but it's a terrible film, and I've never been able to get my head around emojis. But I can't get my head around text either.
Come here. Were you at Central Parks, or were you like the only person who wasn't there?
I think I was probably the only person I know who wasn't at Central Parks over the weekend. But I have been there before.
It looked amazing.
And I was in the one in Woburn Forest, which is just outside Milton Keynes. And I have to say, Milton Keynes is one of the worst places on earth. It's just a terrible, terrible place. No disrespect to Milton Keynesians, well, a little bit perhaps. So they have a place just outside Milton Keynes called Woburn Forest, and I was there last November with my family, and it was fantastic. I loved it. It was great. And it was a press trip, so it comes with that caveat that I didn't have to pay for it.
Yes.
And then I went down to the Longford Central Parks a couple of months back before it opened. And what was really striking about it was how similar, in fact, identical they are. The only difference between the Woburn Forest Central Parks and the Longford Forest Central Parks was the phone boxes are Irish in Longford, and they were English in the UK, obviously are British. But I have to say, there's been a lot of talk about it, a lot of talk about the high prices. It's one of those things I'd be happy to spend my own money on it. I think it's a fantastic experience for kids of a certain age.
Endless stuff to do.
And
does it open today?
It opens today, actually. Okay. But it's not even that there's loads of different activities, and an awful lot of that stuff does come at a really high price. And when you add up all the different activities, you'd be going, God, that's very expensive. Like archery is one price and wall climbing is another price and blah, blah, blah. But the thing is, with the pool area, which is free, and renting bikes, you might only get through one or maybe two activities every day. So, you know, you can measure the cost based on what you can afford. And I have to say, I think the pool area was like, it just sounds ridiculous before you go to it. It's this giant glass dome that's heated to 29.5 degrees, and there's all this lush vegetation. And I'm just a sucker for water parks.
I love a water park as well.
Because it's one of those things when you're careering down a crazy rapids at like 30 miles an hour with all these people crashing into you, you kind of have to forget all your worries because, you know, you're just worried about not drowning. So it's a great way, and it's a great family experience. Now, having said that, it does come at a price and it's not going to be for everybody, but I really enjoyed it when I was there last year.
Yeah, I look forward to going. Okay, let's get to our Price Watch problem. Dear Price Watch, Aldi are selling battery-powered lawnmowers for €100, but they come without a battery. I bought one and brought it home and realised it had no battery. I called the help desk and was routed through to the UK, and it seems that the number of batteries available in Ireland now is zero. What is that about?
Yeah, this man actually, when he sent me the mail, he sent it in capital letters.
Right.
Which suggests a degree of rage. And you can kind of understand that. And first, I have to say, I'm a big fan of Aldi. I'm a big fan of Lidl. And I do like the impact they've had on Irish consuming life, because they're only here 2 decades. And when they first came, we treated them with suspicion, and we all used to go into them and marvel at all the weird stock, particularly the stuff in the middle aisles. And you might have your odd ham in one section, and then your blowtorches and your jackhammers in the next. And, you know, but they have helped to keep prices down for Irish consumers, and that was particularly important during the crash when, like, people were genuinely very, very they were struggling to get by. And I also have a real soft spot for the middle aisle of both Aldi and Lidl. I find myself standing there going, you know those ham carvers that you see in delis?
Yes.
I find myself standing there going, I could do it one of them. Like, when would I ever use a thing to slice ham thinly? It's just a ridiculous thing. But they have all of that stuff. And that's where this battery-powered lawnmower came from. So this listener went into his Aldi, he bought a battery-powered lawnmower, he brought it home, took it out of the box, there's no battery. So then he called the help desk And when he called the help desk, he says he was routed through to a UK division of Aldi, and that kind of aggravated him. Now, I'm not sure if it aggravated him because they didn't know what he was talking about or whatever it was. But then it turned out that when he was speaking to the people in Aldi and at that help desk, and then they couldn't find him a battery for his lawnmower, which effectively meant that he'd spent €100
on a product that wasn't usable, a piece
of plastic and metal that he could never use to cut his grass. So I can kind of understand why there was all caps. And he was shouting, because he was clearly very annoyed. So I contacted Aldi on his behalf, and they came back to me, and their response makes sense, but you know, I can completely understand where he was coming from and where things went badly awry, because what they were saying was that they were selling a range of different products that could all be powered by the same battery, but the battery had to be bought separately from the range of products. So there was different things that you could buy, and they'd all be powered off the same battery, but you'd need to buy the battery separately. And a spokesperson...
that's no problem if you can buy the battery.
And is a spokesman told me... Oh, and you could. So in the store, when he was buying his lawnmower, next to it, there would have been the battery.
Okay, okay.
And in the promotional material that Aldi had sent around the place...
It said battery not included,
and you buy the lawnmower and then you buy the battery separately.
Okay.
And in the store, and I take what they say at face value, and I believe what they say that it was advertised clearly in the store, you know, battery not included. It was also on the packaging of the product. But having said that, we're all guilty sometimes of just seeing something in a box, taking the box, putting it in our shopping trolley, and away we go. An awful lot of people kind of shop on autopilot, so I can completely understand why the listener didn't cop that the battery and the battery powered lawnmower were sold separately.
Yes. So I remember getting one of those battery operated swing seats for Ellie when she was tiny, and we were deranged with the lack of sleep at that point. One of those big fat batteries, you know.
I remember
that. Don't have knocking around.
No, absolutely.
Too often. So I'm like raging, having like sitting up, like behind the thing, pushing it.
You're the battery, effectively.
Yeah, exactly.
But so, I can understand where they're coming from. They're actually set. The battery is one of the unique things that they're selling, and that's, you know, the battery works for multiple different products, and that's great. I can also understand where he was coming from, because he just assumed that he was buying a totally everything contained in the box product. I think maybe where they went wrong is that all the Aldi staff in this instance, who were at the checkouts, should have been told by their management to say to everybody who had either a lawnmower or whatever other product was part of the range, you know, you need the battery with this. And that would have been a simple thing, and it would have avoided all sorts of complications and difficulties. And then I think maybe they should have had a set of the batteries in reserve, so that when people like our listener realised that they'd bought the wrong product, they could have gone back to the store and they could have said, well, here you go, you need the battery, and that's separate. So anyway, I contacted the store. They explained to me how the whole thing worked was, and they said that they had been in touch with our listener, and he was getting sent a battery for his lawnmower, and it's going to be sent to his local store, and he can go in and pick it up, and then he'll be able to cut his grass.
Okay, and you'll get a text with small letters saying, thank you, Connor.
Exactly.
So you can contact Connor with any consumer queries by emailing pricewatch@rte.ie. Thanks for coming as always, Connor. Kiss, kiss. Let's take a break.
Email ray@rte.ie. The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Keep your texts coming into 51551. Catherine, my God, I sent kisses in a text to my coal man. Who has a coal man these days? I was absolutely mortified. I had to then text and say I was really sorry that wasn't meant for you. I kept the money under the plant the following week so I didn't have to face him, says Trish. Anyway, Love Island people, it is the final tonight. There have been tears, bitter breakups, shocking recouplings. But after 8 weeks of drama and romance, it is coming to an end tonight. And I know people are actually going into mourning about this. We're joined in studio by Love Island superfans Fionnuala Jones and Erin McGregor. Guys, good to see you.
Good to see you too.
Now, what have we thought of Love Island this year? I know, certainly from my friends who are watching it, it is not as racy maybe as the last couple of years. But as I said, I haven't watched a whole lot of it. So I did watch last night. Erin?
I mean, it's amazing and it's highly addictive. So if you hadn't watched it, you would have been sucked in. You just can't help it but just get sucked in. I mean, I think maybe it was a little bit more scripted than the years before. Maybe I'm just
But everybody cynical. Who's watching knows that it's completely and utterly produced by the producers.
I don't think so, Catherine. I think people
you don't
at
think
home
they know or you don't
no,
think it's produced.
No, it's 100% produced, but I think people at home that aren't in like TV, the TV world or radio world, they don't really understand production. They don't really get the whole we need some sort of drama.
Yes.
I'm not saying they create the whole drama, but they're definitely pushing.
There's
often
nudging.
Have a chat with
There's
him.
Significant There's nudging. Yeah. On,
significant
I think.
Yeah.
Nudging. Have you enjoyed it this
I
year?
I cried. I'm thinking about it being over. I can't deal, but I also can't wait to have my evenings back because it's a big commitment, as you said. Like, it's 6 nights a week just
yes.
following these people who you had no idea about at the start, and then you become very
You're
attached
invested.
To someone. Invested completely and utterly in these people who are essentially strangers to you. It's bizarre, but it's amazing. I love
Why
it.
Are you so invested? Why? How do you get so invested?
Listen, I say this all the time and I get laughed at, right? But there is the non-cynical part of me that believes that people can genuinely come out of this and be in love. And
Has
I think that's what I love.
In any other series?
Camilla from Camilla and Jamie from season 3 are still together. Dom and Jess from season 3 got married.
Olivia
and our duo baby. Olivia and Jermaine, yeah. It happens.
Your man.
You know, Alex or whatever his name is.
But and it seems to have become popular across the board this year as well. I know you're watching it with your daughter. I know my aunt and her or my godchild, they're watching it together. And so is it because they've kind of gone for that? Like they've gone for a bit more of a broader spectrum? Like because there's a lot less people having sex than there would have been in previous years. Or else they're not showing it.
Well, they're probably
they're
not showing it.
Are they having sex?
Okay. Yeah.
You don't go to all that effort.
I think it touches on so many different things, like from the 6-year-old woman to this 15-year-old girl, maybe shouldn't be watching it, but it touches on so many emotions. I mean, I went through the breakup with Amy on Love Island. I remembered my own breakups. I remembered being, you know, rejected. I think it's bringing up topics that really need to be talked about. And I think that's what makes it so special because people are going, oh yeah, remember a man didn't like me. Hmm. Remember that happened to me. And I think that's why people get invested in it because it's touching on so many topics that people have gone through themselves.
And they're in there for 8 weeks.
That's a long time.
So how many on average couples do you get through or like are you a part of? Is
oh
that
God,
a kind of a fair
like,
question?
It's just a conveyor belt
is
like
it?
Of people in and out. I mean even
so
if you look
at so just even try and explain it to me like as somebody
think of coppers on a Saturday night. That's the best way to do it. It's a conveyor belt.
And you know
belt.
I swing in the mirror United coppers myself. But I suppose to maybe I should have probably done this at the top of the interview but for somebody who's never seen it and if they want to tune in tonight to watch the grand final, set the scene, what happens, who's there, who's still left and what can we expect?
So I suppose the big focus for audiences here is our Irish talent, Maura Higgins, Queen of Longford, and Greg, hailing from Limerick. So Maura is coupled up with Curtis, who we know from Dancing with the Stars.
Yep.
And Greg is coupled up with Amber. So this episode, they do this whole thing where it's kind of like a fake wedding. Like the girls go dress shopping, the lads go off and get suits and whatever, and then they come back and they write up these like big declarations of love, in inverted commas, for their girls. They have this big dinner and it's kind of like their last hurrah and we're watching at home and we're voting at the same time to be like, right, who are we convinced by? Who do we think is playing a game? And then the public decides and we have our winners of 2019, essentially.
There's four left.
Okay, so who's left, Erin?
We have Maura and Curtis, so we have a bit of Team Ireland in there.
Yeah.
We also have Greg and Amber. Also, Greg is Irish, so we're big supporters of that.
Yeah.
We
have that's brilliant that the English are voting for them. You know
yeah,
what I mean?
I am so happy and I was talking to someone earlier
it's
on.
Not, it's completely unlike the Eurovision where we don't get a look in.
It's so good. Like, I would really love an Irish person to win because they are set to make a few bob for themselves and I just think, go get them. I mean, yeah. There's opportunities out there for them to grab and reach and I just want one of our own to do really well. So, I mean, I'm Team Ireland, whichever couple.
Yeah, I'd
as long as we have a bit
whoever.
Of Ireland in there, I'm happy with that.
Okay. And what are the bookies saying? Are they tipped to win?
I think it's still Molly Mae and Tommy are leading.
Okay.
They've been together from the start and they're official boyfriend and girlfriend. In second place, seemingly like coming up behind them is Ovi in India, which I'm very surprised by.
Really?
I don't think they'll like they're second favourites to win. They're not
Ovi
win.
Is so funny. He's
divine.
Real cool.
Right.
But he wasn't in it from the start. And when one of the original characters left left last night, so he was in from the start. See, they filter people in, and they nearly filter them in better looking. Okay. Fair looking. It's like it's
so your
it's
eye
crazy.
Will be turned.
Your head will be turned. Yeah. Exactly. Okay. But Ovi and Indy haven't been in from the beginning. And when Anton left last night, he was an original, and I felt like, oh no, I forgot he was an original.
Yeah.
I really would love someone to win that has been in there from the start as well.
Okay.
You know, because they've done those 8 weeks, and they talk about the outside. All you hear in there is like, you know, when we get on the outside, and I just can't help but think of prisoner cell block.
Sounds like
do you remember that program? Do you remember that program? It's like, you're not in prison, you're on
prison
Love
break.
Island. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Sitting there, putting on your eyeliner, get your tan done for 8 weeks. Yeah. Having an outside.
When we get out, like, in the real world. Yeah. I'm like,
come here,
okay,
let's
lads.
Take a listen to a few of them, because everybody loves, like, Maura's had some brilliant sound bites. I mean, she's just priceless.
Some gal.
Funny. So let's take a listen. This is Maura talking about her sex eyes.
Everyone thinks that Tommy is 50-50 on me and Molly, and I don't know what that man is thinking. He's very hard to read. I really want him to pick me. Like, I really, really do. I just know I need to look hot. I need to be sexy. And give him some sex eyes, you know?
Love it. I mean, the country here seems to have fallen in love with her, because she genuinely, from last night, and again, I am not an expert, is she as genuine as she comes across?
I think straight talking.
Yeah. She's been like that from the start, which I think is something that people appreciate, and I think that's why people are getting behind her.
And like, she get on with the other housemates?
Yeah.
Okay.
That's She's good very good friends well. With Molly May, and yeah. seems to get on well with the rest of them. I have no doubts that she went in there like to win and for the experience, but I don't think she went in there playing games, if that makes sense. Like, she was going to go in there and be herself.
I don't think she could play games.
No.
Okay.
She's one of them. Like, if she doesn't like it, she can't hide it.
Yes.
And I think that's why everybody fell in love with her. It did take a little while, I think, for people, because people were shocked. Like, yeah. sexy eyes and... FF for the Fanny, you know what? Like, it was kind of like, oh God, did she just say that? And she's from Ireland. Well, yeah. We don't say things like that. You know, it was kind of a bit, but people actually came around to the fact that she was genuine, and it's just like a normal person and just shoots straight from the hip. So it is respected.
I was more shocked that Sean O'Rourke said it. Not Harry Potter. Let's talk then. So you think it's Tommy and Molly that's going?
I don't. I think Maura and Curtis are Amber and Greg. But that could be just my own personal favourites that I want.
Okay, okay. Let's take a listen to Tommy and Molly, because this is what seems to be a very huge declaration of love.
When I say I love you, I could cry every time I say it. Honestly.
Don't say that.
No, honestly, I could cry every time I say it, because I mean it. Some people throw it around, but when I say those words to you, I 100% mean it. See, I've picked your nose.
Yeah, you have. You
and
have
I've flicked it off my fingers. So it just shows, doesn't it?
We are very well matched, it's weird.
Very well matched. And we've not only found, you know, just a girlfriend, a boyfriend, we've found a very, very special bond and connection.
Yeah.
That is very rare to find.
Mm.
And I just think we need to capitalise on that now.
To be honest, I actually, when I listen to that, I actually cringe inside. I'm not able for those declarations of love. I'm like, oh no.
Oh, I love them. Hooked them to my veins. I was crying. I was crying again. Like,
what?
I'm like, this show is so fake. And then something like this happens and I'm like,
oh, just bawling. I was sitting there going, was he actually playing the guitar while that was happening as well? So where are you watching the final tonight?
I'm watching it at home in silence, because I spend my time going shh to everyone else, because I need to listen to every word they say.
Okay. Fionnuala?
I'm at the My Pod on Paper finale party in Odeon on Harcourt Street. It is going to be a very, very good one.
Okay. Have you taken tomorrow off work?
Unfortunately not. I'll have to be very well behaved
You'll
this
have to
evening.
Be behaved. And come here, not only Love Island USA has started, and also it's been announced that they're going to be doing a winter and summer one. So they're doing it in South Africa as well?
Yeah. Oh, lovely.
Wow.
Yeah. We're going to be Love Island out, if that's even possible. Like,
just... Is it all a bit too much too soon? Do you think?
I'm an absolute super fan, and I'd say it's too much too soon. I think the novelty will wear off if we're watching it in January and then watching it 6 months later. I think the whole thing about the series is the build up to the summer with it.
Yeah.
I don't know, like, we'll see.
Okay. All right. Well, listen, thanks a million. Enjoy the final tonight. If you need any bit of counselling or anything,
I'd really appreciate
you
that.
You can come in and chat to me next week, Fionnuala. No problem. We're going to get the lads back up and have an L tune. Up you go to the mics, lads. State Lights are back in studio to finish out the show for us. Saw State Lights in Workman's a while ago. Best live act around at the moment. Can't wait to see them again, says Dean in Walkinstown. Catherine, who was that singer on your show?
show. They are fantastic. I so enjoy listening to you. Oh, I so enjoy listening to you. I thought it was like, I so enjoy listening to you, Badge. Comes in from Yvonne in Westport. So lots of love coming in for you guys.
That's great. It's brilliant.
People want to know where else they can hear, where they can hear you.
Yeah, so our kind of main show now coming up is in October 5th in Whelans. So that's our main headline.
Okay.
And it's we've played that venue many times, but we've never played the main room on our own. So that's going to be a big one for us. So we're excited for that one.
Okay.
We're playing Electric Picnic as well.
Okay, what stage are you guys on Electric
Picnic?
We're
on the Salty Dog stage.
Okay, fab. Sunday. Oh, that's my favourite stage.
Oh, it's a great stage.
Yeah, it's brilliant. And come here, the star is rising quite quickly. You know, you're getting a lot of brilliant reviews. There's a lot of love coming in from all around the country. Can you feel things starting to turn and starting to change? Because you guys met in BIM, am I right in saying that? The music college on Francis Street.
So we met 4 or 5 years ago. So like it's been... I feel like we're getting kind of better all the time. You can feel that. And you know, it is one of these kind of weird things in this industry. You know, you can suddenly feel a tipping point coming.
Yeah.
And you don't know why that is almost, but you can feel it. And I think I can feel it.
Yeah, go with it.
I believe we can do it, and I'm excited for it. We're excited for the next year.
Good for you. All right, what are you going to play us out with?
So this is our new single called Open Your Arms.
Fab. Take it away.
Grows. How strong the power, no one knows. Can you feel it? Can you feel it burn? Oh, can you feel it? Can you feel it burn?
Show on RTE Radio 1 with All Care Pharmacy. Expert advice on hay fever for welcome relief. at Allcare, the largest Irish-owned pharmacy brand.